Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today, Wednesday, January 13th, 2021, we're going to take a look at three questions we've been hearing from international educators over the last week and a half. So we want to take time today to say thank you to those that are taking in the Roundup live on 1 p.m. on Wednesdays. Any of those of you who are watching on repeat on either our Facebook page or our YouTube channel, thank you for being a part of that conversation there. And also a special, as always, a special shout out to those that are downloading our podcast each week, the audio version of this Midweek Roundup, and making it a part of their listening journey online. It's a great privilege to be coming to you each week and sharing our thoughts on some of the international ed issues of our day. And like no other, we'll get right into it with our first question of the day. But before we do that, I want to share for those that are watching for the first time, all of our news stories that we cover, the themes and the questions that we develop each week for the Roundup are coming from our newsletter, all the SMIE news fit to share, and that stands for Social Media and International Ed News. That comes out on Mondays at 9 a.m. Eastern, and you can sign up for free at our SMIEconsulting.org website. Just go to the subscribe link and you can click there. I'll also be dropping this week's edition, the link to that of the roundup of the newsletter, dropping that in the comments section on the Facebook page so that you can find the link there to see what we're talking about with the newsletter, and then also subscribe. We'll always welcome you into the journey as well. And we take the themes that we see in that newsletter among the international ed stories and talk about the kinds of questions that we see as helping to define where we can go as a profession in our future pursuits as we develop tools and resources and knowledge that will help us better apply what we know to our future students and to our current students as well. So let's get right into it. Predicting the future is always a game that most folks who do it are wrong more than they are right. And no matter whether it's betting on sports teams or predicting upcoming trends in your field of study, whatever it might be, or your profession, there are always going to be those who make the effort, really, and frankly, more power to them. Just it gets conversations going. And one of the people that does that in international ed is someone I've had the pleasure of knowing over the last 20 years, 25 years or so, and that's Marguerite Dennis. She used to be a major player at Suffolk University in their international ed, particularly their global campuses abroad. I've had the pleasure of hearing her speak several times and know for certain that she does know what she's talking about. She's made a regular effort to put out her thoughts on obviously trends as well in international education, and has regularly done 10 predictions for higher ed, or 20 predictions for that type of thing for our field. And on the whole, she's been largely on point with her predictions. She had a University World News article this past week come out that touched on a lot of these, her past predictions from 2005. She had a white paper about 10 trends in higher education, talking about competition growing in the world for international students, not just the U.S. and the U.K. and Australia. Also, she made some predictions in 2014 for what was coming in the latter part of the teens decade, and rise of MOOCs and other forms of credentials that students would or colleges would buy online courses from each other. That enrollment plans would include career counseling and alumni affairs in the mix as to what was considered important. But now going forward, she's made some predictions that I certainly want to touch on here that have a lot of relevance for what we're talking about today, and the impact of a global pandemic on our field and that type of thing. Run through some of these and get your takes on these. First up, students, faculty, and staff will travel with digital health passports verifying COVID-19 test results. Certainly, that is going to be something we talk about next week as well, in that travelers' new order coming down effective, I think, in the next week or two, that all travelers, international travelers to the United States, must have proof of a negative COVID test in order to be, before they will be admitted into the United States. And that certainly, that's not a digital health passport yet, but certainly that's coming. And certainly there will be countries in the next few months, as vaccines become more readily available, that may even require vaccines before students or any visitors could enter a particular country. So I think that some sort of digital health passport is inevitable. We all who've traveled internationally have those yellow cards that mark when we've had our shots and vaccinations and such. And that's a digital version of that is a, kind of a logical extension of what's coming, I think. So verifying COVID-19 test results, certainly that happens in China right now. There's kind of a mandated app that people use that tracks movement on all cell mobile devices. So I think there's going to be some important pieces there that of the digital health passport idea that will definitely be put in place on a global scale that for traveling students. Next one, she says, students will enroll in colleges and universities with well-established health protocols. Now, this is something I think is more important than we might give ourselves credit for. There are schools in the United States that have done an absolutely abysmal job in terms of managing COVID-19. We saw that in the early part of the fall with a lot of the large state institutions in the South, not having very well-established protocols, regular testings and quarantine procedures and social distancing and masking, all the pieces of the puzzle that go together to provide an adequate safety net and security net, health net for students, faculty, and staff on college campuses. We've seen, and we'll probably see more data in the coming weeks and months on how colleges that have gone, that went fully in person with modified safety precautions, health and safety precautions on campus, we'll see data on how that worked. We saw some of that from Purdue and IU a couple weeks ago. We covered that here on the Roundup. But I think that's going to be a part of the question, and we've talked about this as well before, in that safety can mean very different things to different people around the world and at different times. I retold the story before about how working at different institutions. I worked at a public private institution in the city of Milwaukee, Marquette University, my alma mater. And that institution, when we talked about safety, it was about safety from crime and that type of thing, because we were in a downtown urban environment, very close to areas of the town that weren't necessarily the safest for students to go. No real reason for students to be there anyway, but some of that overlaps onto the college campus. That's just part of an urban campus's environment and DNA. And that was a very different kind of safety than what we're talking about now with health safety on campus. I worked at a school in the Midwest in Indiana where one of the, at events, parents would, a parent would talk about safety as it impacted, worried about tornadoes impacting the college campus. There wasn't so much the concern for physical safety from crime, but it was from natural disasters, so to speak. So that was a different kind of safety. You've had post 9/11 working at an institution, suburban institution in Indiana that participated in a Muslim Student Issues Conference that we worked with Education USA on. And safety there was a very different proposal. That was for us, for Muslim students in the post 9/11 world, immediately in the aftermath of that, and their, how they were treated on campus. So physical safety from ethnic and racial and discrimination. So there's different kinds of safety. So the health safety in terms of where students will look and ask the questions. And I think that's going to be an important piece of international education strategies now, is talking about how you handle the pandemic and what you did right and the quarantine facilities you had, the twice weekly testing you did, the mask, how mask and social distancing protocols were enforced. All of these things will matter to prospective students and particularly to their parents. So having answers to that, incorporating that into your communication flow, having your current students, international students, tell that story of how it went, that's going to be important for you to have as part of your responses that you make available to prospective students and parents. Talking about other things than in Marguerite's predictors, students will attend school year-round in some combination of online and in-person instruction. We're already seeing that. We're seeing credit-bearing gap year programs will increase worldwide. And I think for a number of schools that had high levels of high numbers of deferments of admission offers from 1 year to the next, having something more concrete that can be built in as a credit-bearing experience that can apply back to their studies when they are finished with that gap year is important. Maintaining that communication through a gap year is also going to be a big piece of the puzzle too, because that's not for U.S. institutions. That's not a very common thing that we're increasingly seeing. Particularly, we see that with the pandemic. UK universities are much more familiar with that since the gap year is very common in their student experiences. So an increasing proportion of higher ed enrollments will come from company-sponsored short-term certificate programs and boot camps. And you certainly see a lot of the overlap with digital credentials, micro-credentials that are badges, that type of thing that's coming into this, the language of certainly corporate America for training programs, but also other companies that send cohorts for either online or in-person programming. That is happening for U.S. institutions that build custom programs like that. So that certainly, you can see a lot of that happening. That higher ed institutions will hire chief innovation officers charged with implementing vision plans. And that's a piece I think is certainly coming and should be coming, frankly. It's a piece that often gets disconnected between vision and strategic planning, because those should work hand in hand in terms of strategic mission driving towards achievement of a vision for an institution or a mission statement for an institution. Those are two different things as well. But there's that chief innovation officers, that's a page out of corporate America that you certainly can see becoming an important piece. And one in particular, there she has about 20 or so different predictions, but one in particular that I see very important for international education, international student enrollment, more than most of the other predictions, as something that's has been a rising priority and will need increased focus from institutions, is career counseling will begin before enrollment and extend throughout the enrollment process and after graduation. Colleges and universities will embrace a tenure acceptance, matriculation, and graduation plan for students. And I think that there's a lot of value there, because that's the part of an institution that is for an international student that maybe has the thought of exploring work opportunity after graduation. Certainly we'll be looking at it in respect to their home countries, but maybe also about how they could be able to work in the U.S. That's going to be a piece that I think you will see a lot of lot more emphasis on, because outcomes matter. And this is something that we really see institutions struggling with in terms of international students, because there isn't always a real strong connection between the International Student Advising Office and your career counseling office or professional development office, whatever it's called these days. There are rules and regulations that apply for international students. Certainly the International Student Advising Center knows that, but the Career Counseling Center doesn't perhaps have facilities or practices or modules of their programming that is designed for international students, but that's going to matter more as part of a choice, the choices that students make as it relates to where they're going to go. Parents will become more savvy about asking those questions about what you're doing for international students as it relates to preparing them from careers, not just academically, but professionally, the career counseling, the interview skills, the resume writing skills, but also connecting students with companies that will knowingly hire international students and regularly do hire international students for jobs and internships. That matters, and so providing that proof is going to be an important piece of the puzzle. So great article from Marguerite Dennis. Again, definitely check it out. The link is in the comments section on the Facebook page. But certainly if you get the newsletter from this past week, which I've also put in the comments section, you'll be able to find the links to all these stories. Shifting gears to our second question. How can you set up an international ambassador program? Now, this is something that I'm doing a series now for IDP Connect on the six P's of Strategic International Enrollment Management. And it's my take on what I see today as the most essential elements to strategic planning for recruitment, enrollment of international students on your campuses. And one of the P's that I talk about is peers. It's actually the final P I'll talk about probably in June with the IDP Connect series. But this the importance of peer recruitment in the international student recruitment process, admissions process, is important now more important than ever. And there's a lot of different reasons for that. Many of those have we've talked about before about how international students want to see hear from their peers about what the experience is like, and particularly in times of concern or trouble. Post-Trump's election in 2016, there was a push for "You are welcome here," and having your current international students a part of those initiatives. And I think that's been even more enhanced with the pandemic, in that your future students want to know how your current international students are doing, how they're faring with the pandemic. They want to hear from them in chats, in video messages, in emails, and whatever the communication tools you're using. They want to hear from students who are living it now, to answer the questions about how they'll be, how life is like, how your college is handling the pandemic. So example that I'm sharing with you this week is from the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. They have set up a Global Ambassador Scholarship Program, and this is a huge deal for this state university. They haven't had really significant scholarship money that they've had committed by the institution to enroll international students before. And I'm going to be in touch with their Director of International Recruitment soon on this to get more details on how they're going to work out the ambassador portion of this. Because part of the requirements of the scholarship is that international students that are selected will serve alongside the university's international recruitment team as ambassadors representing UT, their home country, and international students. So this scholarship program is being designed as a way to have enrolled international undergraduate students be a part of the recruitment efforts for the university. And how important is that? I think this is gold. And for state university to be doing this, a flagship state university in Tennessee to be doing this is absolutely phenomenal, UT Knoxville. And this is something that I'm seeing more examples of this. And I just want to share a couple details on the scholarship amounts, because you're wondering, well, is this just a token scholarship, a couple thousand dollars or what? This is actually, the dollar amount is over a four-year period will be up to $60,000 over the 4 years. Now that is roughly $15,000 a year, doing the math there. The out-of-state tuition at Tennessee right now is about $31,000, a little over $31,000 for out-of-state and international students. So the scholarship brings it down to roughly from $31,000 down to $16,000 or so. The in-state tuition is about $13,000, a little over $13,000. So that almost covers the differential between in-state and out-of-state for international students. So that's the equivalent of close to the equivalent of what we used to have at Ball State Universities, what we call our international student in-state tuition waivers or out-of-state tuition waivers. So we had these scholarships. We only had a limited number. We had about 25 a year that we could award to that covered that gap of out-of-state to the out-of-state tuition differential. And that's almost the equivalent of what that was more than the equivalent of what this UT scholarship program is. But the idea was these were students we awarded scholarships to. At that point, we didn't require those students that we awarded these to serve as ambassadors, so to speak. We certainly called on them because they were scholarship students, but for different events and things like that. But this is a formal way of building it into the requirements of the scholarship that an institution is giving to have them have these students or scholarship recipients participate in your recruitment activities. And I think that is just, it makes perfect sense. If you have the scholarship dollars that you're already awarding to international students, perhaps renaming one or two of those that might be distinguishable for international undergraduates, or maybe you have a graduate version of this. Maybe you already use graduate assistants that you might have in your office that do these roles as part of their job. But for undergraduates, it's a different story. So managing that and having them engaged in your communication flow, in your live events, in chats that you do, whatever the course may be, recording interviews, doing day in the life videos about what their experiences are on campus. Having them as a regular part of your recruitment initiatives makes all the difference. And I'm working with a couple institutions right now on developing these kinds of programs, because it is absolutely essential to really have this a part of your overall recruitment strategy. And frankly, from my perspective, these need to be at the heart of what you're doing as an institution right now, because of the depth of concern that institutions have in terms of their international enrollment efforts, to engage your current students, to answer the kinds of questions that only a current student can for a prospective student or a parent of a prospective student. When you have that perspective, in addition to obviously the good things that you're doing and as an institution, and when it comes to the facts and the process and all of that, you need to have your institutional responses kind of already part of that communication flow. But you want to have that touch point with your current students to your prospective student audiences. It makes all the difference. And for me, that needs to be at the heart of what you're doing in your recruitment strategy anyway. And this having a formalized program just makes it a more concrete way of showing how much you value international students in your overall recruitment and international education efforts on your college campus. So great plaudits, kudos to the UT Knoxville International Office that had this scholarship program approved, and best of luck to them as they implement this in the coming months and years. So I'll hopefully have more to report on that in the weeks and months to come. But great initiative there out of Tennessee. Final question of the day, our third question. Are agents' methods changing during COVID-19? And I think this is something that we realize, one of my son's favorite movies, Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, is one of the themes that comes out of that. From the first movie especially, it was life finds a way. When there are challenges and or potential roadblocks to achieving end goals, or where you want to be as a dinosaur, as a institution that is looking to recruit international students, and everywhere in between, life finds a way. You adapt, you overcome. And certainly institutions were thrown in at the deep end, as were their students in the spring of 2020, when everything was forced online and Zoom became the most hated word of 2020, maybe not the most hated. It was certainly a tool that we learned to live with, but certainly there are other banished words that we also talked about in the newsletter this week, like pivots and new normal that none of us would ever want to have to use again in regular language. But this finding our way to overcome the challenges imposed by a global pandemic was certainly something that threw everybody out of whack. The ones that it didn't throw out as much a whack were those that already had a very robust digital strategy and maybe were already doing only armchair recruitment. So from the recruitment side, certainly online recruitment was already a part of what you were doing, and you just amped up more of what you were doing on that front, and probably had much more readily identifiable successes as a result of the pandemic, because that's something you were already good at, hopefully. But you look at groups like educational agents that are very much built on agent to students relationships, personal relationships, in-person relationships, and in-person events. And these are part of the foundation of their success in the past. So if there were lockdowns, if there were certainly restrictions on large public gatherings, and they couldn't have these large in-person fairs, how did these students still get the support that they needed to make it their way through the educational process of applying to institutions? So what happened, two articles I'm sharing with you here. One is from the Pi News that reports 60% of agents report online recruitment success despite challenges of the pandemic. Many of the agents that were certified or that took part in this survey by M Square Media indicated that their online recruitment is here to stay as a regular part of their way of doing business. That the report surveyed some 775 individuals involved in agency business from 20 countries this past October, and it determined how companies had shifted in recruitment online and reflects agent success, and also talks about some of the how international student recruitment would change in a post-COVID environment. That obviously there have been deep impacts on agents' business during the pandemic. Over 60% of those 775 survey respondents suggested, and this is a quote from the Pie, that current online recruitment efforts were either highly or somewhat successful. Only 33 responses indicated they'd been unsuccessful, and 2 said their efforts have been highly unsuccessful. 2 out of 775. So clearly, the greater majority found value, significant value in online recruitment in keeping their businesses open, an important piece there. That the tech challenges, the internet access challenges, lack of a central platform were some of the reasons why that they had issues there. Document verification is a big challenge that institutions obviously are very concerned about. Agents working for universities in Australia and the UK, those institutions put the onus on the agents that the documents are properly verified, and that's part of their agreements with the with those institutions, agencies, and institutions. So that piece of the puzzle, frankly, for UK and Australia institutions to have the agents doing that verification, that's something that maybe is more new of the new in the scope of impacts of the pandemic, but certainly the using institutional portals and all that, and also how they were recruiting students in the first place. A lot of data and documents being transferred back and forth. So some significant issues on the back end. But really, I think when you look at how agent relationships have changed, certainly the pandemic for Australian and UK universities had forced them to do joint projects. IDP, one of the folks that I do work for, IDP Connect, they are Australia and now one of the world's largest recruitment agents. They have their own sub-network of agents in various countries, but they, over in the early part of the pandemic, particularly in the summer months here, they had some major online events for their university clients, connecting them with students in that way. So that certainly made a difference for them. There's a second article that I'm referencing is available for those of you who have NAFSA memberships. It's a two-part series. First one, Agency Engagement in India, Lessons from the UK and Australia. And in this document, they touch on the rise of these online portals, online events that agencies have developed to bring in students and do the matchmaking with universities there, basically online fairs for students and agents, or agents serving as a facilitator with universities. So there's a lot of that going on. They mentioned the IDP Connect and IDP Connect piece and IDP's agency network as part of that. So that there's really some important examples of how agency models have changed and during the pandemic, and how that has really really changing the game, so to speak, for a lot of universities and agents that rely on them. What we're seeing is the agents, much like universities, have had to adapt in terms of how they taught classes, how they have begun to recruit new students, how they enrolled new students in the summer months that were might have been ordinarily had admitted student events in country or alumni events in country, how that process worked, and how orientation programs worked, and the virtual pieces of this, of how we do what we do now in international ed, have become the norms. And I think much, even post-COVID, will continue on in that respect, even though in-person classes will resume eventually. But the recruitment pieces will still be, I think, an essential part of international student recruitment moving forward. So that's all we have for this week on the Midweek Roundup. Really appreciate you taking the time to make us a part of your weekly edification in what you do in international ed. And we're looking forward to keeping in touch with you and for upcoming virtual events, and looking forward to one day returning to in-person interactions. So until that time, have a wonderful day. Cheers.